Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
And okay, that's 10. That was fast. I didn't even mention Divinity. Oh, hi, everybody. So I have some more games that I wanted to go a little bit more in-depth on. That's actually starting to pile up a little bit. But you know what? Something had been on my mind recently, and I wanted to do a different kind of Cytania Mine just in order to talk about that, which is about must-play games, at least in my opinion, that people seem to have not played. Things that are really good and should probably be played by more people, but unfortunately seem to have kind of gotten lost in the shuffle for the majority of the gaming population. This happens quite a bit because if you think about it, if like 100 different titles come out in a year, some are going to get a lot of attention, some of them are going to get a lot of media coverage, and maybe word of mouth travels around with them, especially if they're big franchises. But sometimes they're good, but maybe you just didn't hear about it, or it came out a few years ago and you weren't paying attention to it then. Well, I wanted to do an episode highlighting some of those that if you were not aware of them or you didn't know that they were good, you may want to check them out. So I tried to do a few criteria for this because I needed to rein it in a little bit, mostly because this list and was supposed to be 5 titles and it quickly became 10 because I could think of so many so quickly. So there are a few criteria, in case you're wondering. The first one is it has to be a game I actually completed. These are games that I actually, for all intents and purposes, I finished them. You're going to see some of them are not necessarily completionist kind of games. I'm not Gerard, I can't do it, but games that I have seen the essential end game of. Okay, so that. The second thing to note is that this is not my top games. This is not top 5, top 10 games of all time for me, because that list does include a lot of titles that might have had critical and financial success and that have been talked about for a very long time, for good reason. Instead, I'm going to highlight 10 games that, when I talk to people about them, they have a tendency to say, I've never played it, or I didn't really know about it, anything like that. These are 10 games that I always end up saying, oh, if you haven't played it, then you really should, because a lot of people seem to have missed the boat on them. And so without further ado, 10 must-play games you probably missed, and this is in no particular order. I'm going to actually start with a couple games that inspired this list in the first place. And the first game I wanted to talk about was Dying Light. Now, Techland created 2 different zombie-based survival open-world game series. One of them was Dead Island, which I didn't like, and I've made it very well known that I did not like it. One of the reasons why I didn't like it is because Techland also made Dying Light. And Dying Light was, in every way, shape, and form, a much better version of it. In fact, in the pantheon of zombie games in general, Dying Light is way, way up there. Now, I know that there's a few people who are out there that kind of goes, ah, Nathan, zombie games, really? And that's why I recommend Dying Light, because the parkour aspects to it, and the variety of different zombies, and especially this very interesting mechanic that they got into, which was the light-dark mechanic, where, you know, during the day, it's actually a very different game than it is at night, being the predator during the day and being more like prey at night, and how the game keeps shifting up really keeps you on your toes. The mix of different weapons and upgrades and everything, and the verticality of the entire system, and really the spirit of exploration in addition to the combat, and trying to encourage you to both be agile and strong at the same time, is really great. You get to really explore, you get to forage, you get to scavenge for things, you get to do a lot of stuff in this game, and then you get a grappling hook, and by that point, you know, all bets are off. You're in great shape. So if you're like, I don't like zombie games, and you look at all of the other examples that are out there and tell me, see, I didn't like this, I didn't like this, I didn't like this, I can understand that it is not always good. In fact, there's more examples of bad zombie games that just feel boring and trite than there are good ones. But Dying Light keeps shifting it up so much that it's hard not to enjoy it. There's something in there to enjoy, even if you're not a big zombie fan. And there's a nice storyline along with it. There's a lot of interesting ways to play the game and some neat challenges. And then I just got into some of the additional content. You get into the following, where you get to drive around in a buggy and basically crash into trees every 5 seconds. So if you enjoy doing that, well, it's got a little something for you too. And the second game that inspired this was another one that I just recently picked back up after playing it back during its release, and that is Saints Row 4. Now, here's the thing. Saints Row 4, I wouldn't even say is the best Saints Row game. I would say that's 3. Honestly, Saints Row 3 was a sweet spot for me, and I feel like it was the best example of the franchise. But I put Saints Row 4 on here specifically because it is so banana nut butters bonkers that you have to experience it for yourself. It is so insane. This is a game that literally starts with you climbing on a nuclear warhead to disable it in midair, and then jumping off of it. All the meantime, by the way, Aerosmith's Don't Want to Miss a Thing playing in the background. You jump off of it, you land in the Oval Office, and are now the President of the United States. This is how the game starts. This is the starting point of the game, and it just gets more insane from there. Now there's virtual reality matrix stuff going on, there's aliens, there's like dinosaurs, you go on a trip with Santa Claus at one point, you get superpowers, and there's giant mech battles. It's one of the absolute most insane games you will ever experience, but that's why I say you really do have to experience it. I liked Saints Row 3. It was definitely crazier than the previous Saints Row games. They definitely escalate over the course of time, but it still had a semblance of realism in there. And so I feel like in terms of narrative and structure and how the game flows, it worked better. But Saints Row 4 is just so insane that if you haven't gotten a chance to play it, you really must. It's an experience all its own. Okay, third game is Prey. And I'm really surprised how many people never played Prey. It's really, really shocking because Arkane Studios always nails it. They have had such a good, consistent record with the Dishonored series. They just do a terrific bang-up job. Really looking forward to Deathloop. I want to see what they do with that game, no matter how little we know about it. But Prey was absolutely spectacular. I said it was the best game of 2017, and I hold to that. I mean, imagine if you were like playing a game that was sort of like Alien or Predator, or any of those like space horror kind of games. It's that. The mimics alone, like the Typhon as a species, are fascinating. All the different variants of it are amazing. But the mimics, the first ones you meet that can turn into any object and you don't know that they're there, are instant jump scare classics. And they really set the tone the second you jump into the main game. It really gives you a wonderful sense of dread, because a lot of times you can't just simply go guns a-blazing into a situation. You just don't have the capability a lot of the times. Maybe you don't have the ammunition, but also you're usually overpowered, especially with some of the later, like, juggernaut bosses that come in. But there's a lot of neat, innovative stuff that they do. I mean, the goo gun, which completely changes how you interact with the landscape of this ship, is terrific. But then also even the skill trees, they do some neat stuff. Like, you can take alien upgrades to get some of the Typhon's abilities, but the more you take, the more the station recognizes you as an alien. So turrets will start to turn on you, doors won't recognize you as human, like, you start to become the alien itself. So how much of that do you want to take on? Even though they might be powerful abilities, you're going to lose the station essentially as your ally, and all the defense systems and such are not going to work in your favor. So they do some really great stuff in this, and I'm really shocked at how many people I talk to that never played it. If you're looking for something that has, like, a really great tense feeling to it, the kind of game that really keeps you in a little bit of state of unease that holds your attention really well, Prey is absolutely that. It gives you a lot of fun options to play around with while experiencing essentially like an alien horror film in space. It's terrific. Okay, so number four. I am always surprised how few people have played Spec Ops The Line from Jaeger. It is absolutely one of those games that you have to experience for yourself. It's why I'm putting it on this list. Because if you have not gotten a chance to play Spec Ops The Line, you really should. It's not a particularly long game, mind you. It's a cover-based shooter, and for the most part, when I'm talking about the gameplay itself, Spec Ops doesn't do anything real revolutionary. I can't tell you that it does anything spectacular. If you've played a Gears of War, or even a Mass Effect, you know what this game is going to feel like, but it's set in a real-world war scenario instead. However, where this really gets high marks is in its story and how it presents itself to you. This is basically Heart of Darkness, the video game. It does such a good job of showing essentially a descent into madness as you make decisions that you almost instantaneously regret afterward without knowing that you're going to regret it. It has some, probably a good three real twist moments, real turning point moments that completely recontextualize the game, and you rarely see that even in narrative games. And this is an action title, so you really need to play it just for the storyline, which is a brilliant tale of going down this psychological wormhole, discussing really the horrors of war from the perspective of the soldiers fighting it. It is fantastic how it was developed, and I recommend it highly if you did not get a chance to play it before. It's gonna be, you know, I think it's 5 to 10 hours for gameplay, depending on what difficulty you're playing on, but you're not really playing it for that. You're playing it for the experience. It really is that, more than anything. Okay, so this came out a few years ago, and I just got a chance to play it, and I had heard some people talk about it, but when I get a chance to talk to other people who play games, it seems like I'm the only one who has still experienced it, and that is Nier Automata. Now, the thing about it is, I am probably one of the few people, even in a smaller group, that played the original Nier. I played the original Nier, and I thought the original Nier was really good, too, but I didn't really have the ability at the time to play Automata. Now I got a chance to, and I can say that it is heads and shoulders better than the original Nier, and again, it's the kind of game that you have to experience for yourself. Did it have its fair share of flaws? Well, yeah, in fact, I could tell you that all the games on this list had its fair share of flaws. They're not perfect games, but they're must-plays because they're experiences more than anything else. Nier Automata is an action title that has, like, real-time combat and plays really well. Plays really well. But then, on top of this, has this very mature storyline that talks about the nature of humanity itself. Talks about what is humanity, what is emotion, what is feeling. These very deep concepts inside a game that's essentially about androids fighting cute robots. And that is fascinating to me. It does such a good job of making those points, too. It does a wonderful job at turning the characters in this game into philosophical talking points of some sort. Sussing out what makes a person, and making you think about the nature of humanity in what is some brilliant philosophical commentary, and then some absolutely devastating moments if you're willing to go past ending A and then look at B, C, D, and eventually E, which continually change perspectives from the different characters and contextualize the entire story in better ways. So you're starting to see the story from different perspectives and see a more full picture of what is actually happening. That's brilliant. And I saw it originally in the first Nier. They did the same thing. It's a great idea to engage people who want to be engaged with a story like this. You really should experience it for yourself. There's bullet hell shooter portions that are pretty entertaining. There's a lot of exploration as well. A lot of quest lines to go on. Tons of content if you just want to play a fun game. But it's the storyline and the deeper commentary that goes along with it that's really the highlight, the star of the show. All right, so we're at number 6, and I had to throw in at least one racing game, and I'm going to throw one in that I feel a lot of people may have missed, especially if you're not into racing games, and that's a real shame because you really should try this one, and it's Forza Horizon 4. I can't, again, tell you what my favorite Forza Horizon game is. Might be 3, but I'm saying 4 because the aspects that they put into the fourth installment, where you're in England, and now there are seasons, and so every, I think, month or every week, I think, they change the season in the game, and it actually changes the landscape of the game, is just such a neat idea that you don't see in most racing games. But if you've not played Horizon as a series in general, you really should try at least one of them. And if you're going to pick one up, I would say just go straight to 4. The idea of having like this open road racing game where you can easily go off-road, and not only does the game not discourage you from doing it, but it actually encourages you to. You'll get special style points and stuff for, going through fences and bushes, causing damage to the landscape around you. But really taking a completely different approach to most racing games, because most racing games are like, well, you got to stay right here on the line, and then you got to make a nice curve. Horizon has no interest in that. Horizon is like, okay, how fast do you get from point A to point B? Go there. It's in some ways a spiritual successor or a contemporary of like the Burnout franchise, but I really do feel like Horizon did a better job of like the off-road portions and feeling like you're really not limited by the atmosphere. There are still some borders in the game, but far less than other games in its arcade racing genre. Plus, you get tons of real-world cars. These are real cars that actually exist that are branded cars, as well as all of the parts. Everything is, like, branded for the game, and the idea of going through this Horizon competition and unlocking some really phenomenal challenges along the way where you're just like racing planes and jets at certain points is just fantastic. It's wonderful spectacle, has great cinematic moments to it, and is probably not the kind of racing game you're expecting it to be. The thing you do have to get used to in Forza Horizon 4, though, is that there are the roundabouts. There's more of them in this game than there are in other games. But the great thing about having that open road is that if you're going straight through the roundabout, just go right straight through. Just poof, right over the hill in the middle. Poof, just right straight through. And that is satisfying all to itself. So something to consider if you're picking up a racing game. Try the Horizon series, and I would say go right to 4 just to see all of the interesting mechanics and the weather system and everything that they put in. Okay, so to this day, I am still surprised at how few people actually played Beyond Good and Evil. I know why it happened. Like, the most likely scenario is that it came out the same year as Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. And so, if you were buying a Ubisoft game that year, you had to pick between these two. And a lot of people were going to go for Prince of Persia because it's an established franchise. Beyond Good and Evil was a brand new IP for them. But if you get a chance to, they have an HD version and it's probably pretty cheap. You really need to play it because the art style, Michel Ancel's art style that he put into this, and the gameplay and the richness of this world that they built is fantastic. It is like a Zelda game, but not made as a Zelda game. In fact, it has a cel-shaded art style that's probably going to remind you in modern terms of like a Breath of the Wild. Now, it is nowhere near as large as a Breath of the Wild. I would say that the overall game, even if you're going around and taking pictures of all the enemy monsters in the game, that's also a thing in this game. Jade, your main character, is a photojournalist, so you go around taking pictures of the different flora, fauna going on. Even if you're collecting everything and getting all the upgrades and experiencing everything, getting all the pearls, you are probably looking at about a 12-hour long game. But you know what? It really is a great 12 hours while you're playing it. It is the kind of game that I absolutely went back and played from scratch. No new game plus or anything. Just, nope, I want to go back and play the whole thing again. It's just too enjoyable not to experience if you only do it the one time. And the storyline is terrific. It's not just, here's the big bad guy you gotta go fight because he's doing a big bad guy thing. They have these levels of, you know, the perspective that people have, the information campaign that the big bad guy is doing. And then as you go through the story, you uncover these very unsettling truths about what is happening behind the curtain. And the way you uncover that and kind of go down this rabbit hole to discover some fairly unsettling things is done so very well. I mean, there's a reason there's a small yet dedicated group that was always looking forward to Beyond Good and Evil 2, even though we don't know what that game ever would have been or if we will ever get it, no matter how many times they've tried to revamp it. But even if it never comes out, the original Beyond Good and Evil stands tall on its own. It really didn't need a sequel to be a great game in its own right. It's just that people would have really liked more of it. Oh yeah, and two words. Space Whale. Nuff said. Okay, this is a great game. I always recommend it to people if they wanted something that was kind of cool and kind of calming, and maybe you like a Stardew Valley that's out there, but you wanted something a little bit different. And that game is Slime Rancher. Slime Rancher is fantastic. It's through a first-person perspective. It's very bright. It's very colorful. You are going around basically collecting these little slimes, and then you are raising them in some fencing so that you can get these plorts, which is sort of like a slime poop, but you can combine different slimes to make these larger specialty slimes and stuff. And it sounds kind of stupid when I'm explaining it, but when you actually get into it and you start exploring the environment, because there is a lot of exploration involved in it, and unlock all of these new areas and find newer, more interesting and fascinating versions of slimes, and uncover these ancient ruins and kind of track the story of one explorer that came before you. And you get to have like the water jet on your back so that you can start to hover across expanses. You start to realize that the experience of just exploring this world and starting your own slime ranch is just so enjoyable and fun and colorful, and in some ways heartening. It just has this almost chicken soup of gaming experience that is hard to deny. There is some combat involved just because some of the slimes are more aggressive than other slimes, and then if you combine more than two slimes together and that slime eats another plort, they become these like sludgy creatures that you have to deal with. But the combat is definitely not a huge focus. It's mostly about kind of growing your farm, expanding this ranch that you're building into all of these different areas, and picking up new upgrades so that you can experience more and more of this landscape. You know, growing crops so that you can feed it to your slimes. And just the general experience of being able to explore this landscape that is really well fleshed out and a lot of fun to experience for yourself, make it a must play for me. I feel like anyone who hasn't gotten a chance to play it, you really should give it a go. This might be the oldest game on the list. I'm pretty sure it is, but that is Tales of Symphonia. Now, there have been a couple Tales games I wasn't as big into. I didn't necessarily like the combat system, but most of them really resonated with me. And the first Tales game that I ever played was Tales of Symphonia, and it still stands as one of the hallmarks of the franchise. Tales of Symphonia, and the Tales franchise in general, is a JRPG series, which makes it even more strange that I'm particularly recommending it, but Tales is great because it's big, it's long, it's got some really great characters involved in it, it has a slightly surreal quality to it, which I suppose is true of almost any JRPG, but it moves along at such a quick pace, because all the combat is done in real time, and actually, in Tales of Symphonia, it's done more like an actual fighting game. You know, you're actually on a plane of battle, and it's like a 2D fighter, where your characters are over here, and you can press different buttons to access your different abilities and commands, and it gets to the point where it's so fast and so fluid that you're looking at even some boss battles being essentially 5 minutes. So no turn-based stuff or anything like that. You're really in and out very quickly, and you even get additional bonuses the faster you complete the combat cycle. So it keeps everything flowing really well. But in addition to that, it's also a huge game that also encourages New Game Plus on top of it. And when I say it's a big game, I'm talking like it's an 80-hour game. Okay, huge. A lot of landscape to enjoy, and then you get an airship, and then you can just go all over the map into these wonderful little places, collect your characters, keep upgrading all of your characters and everything like that. A lot of stuff to explore, and it's all good times. There's not a lot of grind involved. You're just exploring and experiencing the landscape. Then it starts giving you grade, which is something anyone who's played any of the Tales games knows about, but you keep collecting grade throughout the playthrough, and when you finish it, if you want to do a New Game Plus, you can actually cash that in for special bonuses that you get to use in the next playthrough, where you can even get more grade if you wanted to, and you could play through again, like experience and money multipliers, for instance, starting level is higher. And I mean, in addition to the fact that it has so much gameplay and the gameplay is very enjoyable, it also has this beautiful storyline that feels epic, cinematic in some ways, with these really endearing characters that you remember far after you've played it. And if you have not gotten a chance to experience the Tales series, I definitely suggest doing Tales of Symphonia. And I think that if you are not a fan of JRPGs, because I have trouble getting into them a lot of times, Tales of Symphonia is definitely something you might want to check out to see if that's something you enjoy. And now we reach number 10, and I figured it only made sense to put my namesake on the end of this list, and that is Psychonauts. You see, Psytanium is the actual element that they mine in Psychonauts. You go around collecting Psytanium so that you can get upgrades, and that's where I get my moniker from. But Psychonauts is fantastic. If you're looking for a platformer that is very different than other platformers, I feel like a lot of people might have missed this particular one. It will remind you a little bit of a Mario or anything in that vein, a Banjo-Kazooie, if you will. That would be my particular preference. But with this fascinating idea of being a psychonaut, which means that your main character, Raz, literally gets this door that he can pop onto people's heads, open it up, and then go into their psyche. And then the person's psyche itself is the level you are now in. Fascinating. Some of the most innovative and interesting levels in any video game, any platformer you will ever experience. Hands down. They have some beautifully unique things, you know, like a disco paradise kind of world. There is, what is it, Lungfishopolis, where the lungfish is so scared of Raz, it imagines Raz as basically like Godzilla creature that's, you know, crashing through this Lungfishopolis city. The twisty, turny landscape, when you go into the milkman's head, there's one that's like a theater, there's one that's a perfectly formed cube because of how organized Sasha 9 is. But then you can open up parts of it and expands the world. There's some fascinating stuff in there. and it's one of the most innovative platformers that has ever been, and I have not gotten a chance to play Psychonauts 2. I guess it is finally out after all this time, but regardless of that, the original Psychonauts really highlights, showcases Tim Schafer and Double Fine's very unique voice in the gaming landscape, and they do it to full effect. It is absolutely terrific. Just the experience of going around this camp for Psychonauts is a wonderful experience in itself. All right, so there you go. 10 games that if you have not gotten a chance to play them, if you missed them the first time, you really should consider trying them out. Even if they're not necessarily in a genre that you like, that's kind of the reason I picked these particular 10, is because you don't necessarily have to be a fan of the genre. My best suggestion would be, if any of these seem like something that you're even mildly interested in, you can throw them onto like your Steam or GOG wish lists and wait for them to go on sale, because some of them are very old. Some of them are at least 10 years old, and so chances are they're not very expensive right now, but they might be going on summer sales, etc., and might be worth just throwing on there. You can probably pick them up for cheap money. This is sort of the gaming equivalent of, I don't like Brussels sprouts. Oh, well, have you tried it this way? Because this is exactly that. You know, if you're not into racing games, have you tried Forza Horizon as a series? If you're not into platformers, have you tried Psychonauts? If you're not into cover-based shooters, have you tried Spec Ops? If you're not really that interested in the big open-world sandbox games, have you experienced Saints Row 4? You don't like zombies? Maybe you should try Dying Light. You're not into, like, the horror survival games? Maybe Prey. These are the kinds of games that you may have left on the shelf because they were in a genre you didn't like, but that doesn't mean that they weren't worth playing. So I just wanted to make you aware of them. And that's going to do it for this episode, special episode, really, of Citanium Mine. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a few other games that I've been playing recently. Some of them are smaller, more independent games, but I do have a couple that are more mainstream, but definitely need to be talked about, not necessarily in a good way. But, hey, played them. So, here we are. Mind your feet and hands when you get into the cart, as always, and it's a little squeaky right now, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's not moving nearly as fast as I thought it was going to. Oh, I forgot about Divinity! I was gonna put Original Sin 2. Sorry. Maybe I'll have to have another list. You'll come back for that, right? Won't you? Okay, good talk.